welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, programs from radio's golden era broadcasting your theater of the mind. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, for this hour of radio drama. In a little bit, you'll hear Back Home, the story on Stars Over Hollywood from 1952, but now it's the Gulfstream Guild Theater with an adaptation of the 1932 motion picture Red Dust. It originally starred Clark Gable and Jean Harlow. In this episode, we hear Gable reprise his role along with Ann Southern from October 6th, 1940 on CBS.
The Gulfstream Guild Theater. Your host and director of the Star's Own Theater, Roger Pryor. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies, welcome to the Gulfstream Guild Theater. We're glad to have you with us tonight. And when I say us, I'm speaking not only for myself, but for Clark Gable, Ann Southern, Jeffrey Lynn, and Rita Johnson, tonight's Gulf Theater stars. They're waiting to bring you one of the greatest motion picture successes of all times, Red Dust. In tonight's play, Clark Gable plays Dennis, Ann Southern plays Vantine, and Jeffrey Lynn and Rita Johnson are heard as Mr. and Mrs. Willis. I'll step into the character of Limey. And now, Frank Tours raises his baton to conduct Oscar Bradley's Gulf Orchestra in the opening theme of Red Dust. Between the Gulf of Siam and the South China Sea lies French Indochina. On the hot, steaming, fever-ridden banks of the river winding through the jungle from Cholon to Saigon is the rubber plantation of Dennis Carson. Dennis, dressed in dirty white ducks, has just boarded a steamer tied up at a plantation wharf and hails Limey, the captain.
Hi, Limey.
Hello, Denny.
Where you been keeping us, Ark? You're a day late.
Oh, I got caught up on a sandbar.
Don't give me that. The bar you hung on was in Cholon, and the bartender's name is Charlie.
Now, Denny.
Got any passengers aboard? I'm expecting a new man named Willis.
Right you are. He's in the cabin aft. I think the eats kind of got him.
Go to quinine and fix him up. I'll rile him out.
He looks kind of puny for what's the rubber.
He'll get over that or be shipped back on your next trip.
Hey!
Oh, sorry. Wrong room.
Peter!
Hey! Vantine! Wait, stop. Hold on a minute. It's me, Denny.
Denny? Danny, gee, I'm glad to see you.
Hey, you better brush up on your bottle throwing. You missed me by 2 inches.
Oh.
Hey, easy. You want to choke me?
What's the matter? You're playing hard to get. How long does a gal have to wait to be kissed?
When you hear the next musical gong. Well?
I heard it. Oh, Danny, you do love me, don't you?
I'll give you 3 guesses.
What am I, a quiz kid? Say, come to think of it, I ought to be pretty sore at you.
What for?
Don't give me that. You said you'd come back to Saigon in 2 weeks.
Well, I couldn't get away, Vantine. I had to sit up with a sick friend.
What's her name?
I call her Queenie. She's my best rubber tree. Here, let me look at you. You miss me?
Oh, honest to goodness, Denny, I've been so lonesome for you, I could have died.
Sure, I bet. Hey, what have you been doing in Cholon?
Dancing. But a gal can't get top billing down there unless she has hips like a water buffalo. I'm on my way back to the old job in Saigon. Say, you wouldn't be going to Saigon, too.
Nope. I just came aboard to pick up a new surveyor.
Oh, Denny, come along and have some fun. You're the only good guy I ever met in this neck of the woods.
Well, I can't possibly get away till the next batch of rubber is cooked.
But you need a vacation.
I'll be down in 2 weeks.
You said that once before.
Well, I mean it this time.
Yeah, I know your promises. With no encouragement at all, I'd stay right here and see that you keep this one.
Well, now, look, Vantine.
Sure. Well, I can stay with your foreman's wife. She's asked me to visit her a dozen times.
Nope, no soap.
Why not?
Because a rubber plantation's no place for a girl. Mosquitoes, fever, sunstroke, and flies are plenty trouble without you doing a rumba through the work shed.
Aw, Denny, please.
Nope. You go on to Saigon, and I'll see you there in 2 weeks. Honor bright.
Oh.
Come on now. Give me a kiss. I got to pick up my surveyor in the next cabin.
I'll be waiting for you, Denny. Don't disappoint a girl.
I won't. So long, baby.
So long, handsome. See you in Saigon.
Yes? Mr. Carson?
That's right. You're Gary Willis, I take it.
Yes.
Well, this just happens to be the place you get off. Is your duffel packed?
I think so. You see, I had rather a bad night,
Gary,
so
Gary, darling, I've looked all through the medicine kit and I... Oh, I beg your pardon.
Who are you?
This is my wife, Barbara, Mr. Carson.
Your what?
My wife, Babs. This is Dennis Carson.
How do you do?
You mean you brought... You didn't say anything in your letter about a wife.
Well, we've been married such a short time that Gary often forgets to mention me, Mr. Carson. But I shan't be any trouble. I promise you.
I'm sure you won't, because you're both going back where you came from.
But, Carson, there's no need for that. I...
Gary.
Hey, what's the matter?
Just a little dizzy. This awful heat.
Sit down. Come on. Let me see your tongue.
He hasn't felt well since we left Cholon, Mr. Carson.
Now, let's feel your pulse.
It's nothing serious. I've never had anything.
You have this time. You're starting an attack of fever.
Fever?
Listen, Carson, I'm...
Stop
not...
getting excited, both of you.
Well...
That's the surest way to help it along. You can make yourself useful, Mrs. Willis, by getting the rest of your stuff packed while I fetch a litter to carry him off the boat.
Mr. Carson, wait.
Well?
Could I speak to you outside for a moment?
All right. What is it?
Is there a doctor here?
Nearest doctor's in Saigon. 3 days downriver and three back.
Then we must go on with the boat.
Frankly, I wish you could, Mrs. Willis. It'd save me a lot of trouble. But I've got a little conscience left. He wouldn't stand a chance bumping around in this cigar box.
But fever's dangerous. Gary's got to have medicines and someone who knows what to do.
I'm not so bad in a pinch. I've treated every coolie on my plantation for everything from spots to snake bite, and I've only lost a couple.
But you're not a doctor, and Gary's not a coolie.
No. And at the present time, he's not half as valuable.
I won't let you risk his life just because you're angry at him for bringing me along.
You have no business being here.
Mr. Carson.
But since you are here, I'll give you some pointers on practical nursing so you can take care of him while I'm away.
You mean you're going to leave him?
What do you think?
I think you're the lowest, most odious man I've ever met.
I work this plantation, Mrs. Willis. You don't expect me to sit and hold your husband's hand, do you?
Why, you...
All right. If slapping me makes you feel better. Now that you let off steam, go and get your stuff packed. I'll be back with the litter in 10 minutes. He's asleep. But if he wakes up, you better call me.
Is he out of danger, Mr. Carson?
It's a pretty safe bet you won't be a widow.
Oh. You must be awfully tired. You sat there by his bed the whole night. I don't know how I can ever thank you.
Forget it. I'd like to apologize about yesterday.
Oh, no. I'm the one who should apologize. I'm terribly ashamed. We both owe you a great deal.
I'll take your IOU. Shake on it?
Of course. Mr. Carson.
Yeah?
Yesterday you said I didn't belong here, but... Don't you think I can fit in?
Would you mind if I made it my job to see that you do?
I'd be very grateful.
You know, I like people who stand up and fight back. Especially if it happens to be a woman who looks extraordinarily beautiful when she's doing it. And even more beautiful when she's calmed down.
So you can make pretty speeches, too, when you want to.
I'm a civilized barbarian.
You mean you don't wear rings through your nose?
That's right. And I've given up cannibalism. Been on the wagon for 3 months.
That's wonderful. I do congratulate you, Mr. Carson.
You know, you remind me of someone.
Do I? Who?
A girl. A long time ago in London.
What was she like?
Well, something like cream velvet. And a great deal like you. You know, you sort of took my breath away this morning. You're the first lady who ever rode that boat downriver. That's one reason I...
Oh, who's that?
Hey, anybody else?
Why, it's a woman.
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
Surprise! Hello, Denny.
What's the idea, Van Dien?
I'm walking back from a boat ride.
Why aren't you on your way back to Saigon?
I bounced back, that's all. Well, well. Sitting up with another sick rubber tree?
Never mind the cracks. How'd you get here?
Oh, simple. We got about a mile downriver and Limey nosed the old scow into a mud bank.
You mean there was an accident?
You got it right the first time, Toot. Well, Denny, I guess you'll just have to put me up till the boat's fixed.
What?
Oh, you know, just a week, a month, a year. I'm not the kind of a gal who overstays her welcome.
Just what were you doing when the boat ran into the mud bank?
Oh, just listen to him. He has the most suspicious nature, hasn't he, Mr.? Oh. I didn't catch the name.
Oh, Mrs. Willis, Vantine.
How do you do? You were on the boat coming down, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
Wasn't it a quaint trip?
Quaint? Oh, yes, indeed. Terrifically quaint. You know, I've been visiting my dear, dear brother upriver. He has a lovely place. It's carpeted after our old family plantation at Blue Blood, West Virginia. Cotton and honeysuckle like mad. Have you all ever been there?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, but y'all must have heard of us Jeffersons. I was supposed to just loll around home and be fanned by my old nurse. But I'm the restless, adventurous type. I just adore danger.
Really? You ought to carry a lantern.
Yeah. It would come in handy. The guys I meet give me plenty of oil.
How interesting. You'll excuse me? Goodbye, Mr. Carter.
Good night, Miss Willis.
Now, you better explain, Handsome, and explain fast.
It's none of your business. But Mrs. Willis is the wife of my new surveyor.
That's very interesting. Would you tell me why you sent me on to Saigon and you let that dame move in on you?
She's not a dame. She's a lady.
Oh, so she's a lady.
That's right.
Meaning that I'm not?
I didn't say that.
Nobody has to draw me a blueprint. I get it. You gave me the cold shoulder because you thought little Vantine might embarrass her ladyship.
Now, look, Vantine, if you'll just be reasonable.
Reasonable? Well, that dame high-headed me all the way down from Cholan, and right now I got a darn good hunch she's making a play for you.
What are you talking about? I told you she's married.
From the way she was looking at you, somebody ought to remind her of that.
Now, get this. You're going to stick around, and I suppose you'll have to, till the boat's fixed. You'll watch your step and lay off that kind of talk.
Gee, I just noticed. Don't you look nice all shaved and dressed up fancy?
Oh, behave yourself, or you'll go back to Saigon slung in a hammock.
Gee, and you even smell pretty, too.
Stop sniffing at me.
If the wind's right, they'll be holding their noses all the way to Saigon.
And another thing, lay off that guff about your old family plantation in Virginia.
West Virginia.
I'm not kidding, Vantine.
Okay, Denny. If that's the way you want it, I'll keep so far in the background you won't even be able to see me on a clear day.
Just keep it in mind that I have no feeling for Mrs. Willis, but one of the greatest respect.
Where have I heard that one before?
That remark just goes to show the difference between you and a lady. Good night.
Denny.
What?
Before I go into the silences, let me give you a word of advice, Handsome.
Well?
The only difference between a lady and a dame is geography and climate. This happens to be Indochina in the monsoon season. When the big blow comes, hold on to your hat, brother, and don't say I didn't warn you.
Of stifling tropic heat have passed since Vantine and Gary and Barbara Willis came to Dennis's plantation. Gary has recovered from his attack of fever and is off on a last surveying trip before the jungle is claimed by the devastating rains of the monsoon season. He alone is unaware of the growing attachment between his wife Barbara and Dennis. It's a hot, sultry evening. Dennis approaches the house and speaks to the Chinese houseboy who's lighting the porch lamps.
Oi.
Oh, yes-y, Mr. Denny.
Did you put that new lamp in Mrs. Willis' room?
Oh, yes-y, Mr. Denny.
And listen, there are a couple of pheasants hanging up in the back shed. Fix them up for dinner tomorrow night. You know, the way Mrs. Willis likes them.
Oh, yes-y, Mr. Denny. Hoi, fix-y, or make a water at the mouth.
Hello, Romeo.
Oh, hello, Vantine.
How's the mighty hunter? I hope the pheasants didn't peck you.
Don't try to be funny. Excuse me, I've got to wash up.
Could you spare me a few minutes of your valuable time?
All right, spill it.
3 weeks ago, you said something about sending me back to Saigon in a hammock.
Well?
Well, bring on your hammock and coolies. I'm ready to go.
What's the matter with you, crazy?
I came in on a pass, and I don't like the picture. It looks like an unhappy ending. Well, can I have the coolies?
Sorry, I can't spare any. Look, Vantine, you'd be a lot happier and digest your food better if you'd try to understand the situation. It isn't...
Oh, so it's a brand new and different situation, eh? Well, you'll pardon my error. Back in Blue Blood, West Virginia, we all call it a triangle. But then everybody there is so very narrow-minded.
I'm a fool for even hoping you'd understand.
Look, Danny, why don't you get wise to yourself? You think you're in love, but you ain't. You don't belong in her world, and she don't belong in yours.
You don't know what you're talking about. And if you're so upset about what you think is going on, you can have your hammock and coolies the first of the week.
Thank you so very much.
Don't mention it. Now, if you don't mind, I'll wash up for dinner.
You don't know it, big boy, but you're already washed up.
You're shivering, Barbara. You cold?
No.
Here, you better put the scarf around your shoulder. One of these tropic nights fool you.
Dennis.
Yes?
Things like this do happen to people, don't they? People do suddenly look into each other's eyes and brush away the world around them, don't they?
I guess they do. It never happened to me before, just this way.
Mm-hmm. It's just as if you kissed me when I most wanted you to and wondered whether you were going to or not.
Gary's got to be told that I want to marry you. We can't go on holding hands behind his back and stealing kisses in the moonlight.
I know, but we mustn't hurt him, Dennis. He's got to know that I tried to think of him, but no matter how hard I tried, all I could think of was loving you.
Tomorrow I'm going downriver where he's working. They're having trouble there with the coolies. Tiger's scaring him off the job.
And you'll tell Gary then?
Yes. Has to be done sometime. Might as well get it over with.
Oh, Dennis, I'm afraid.
Don't be. Everything's going to be all right. Good night. And goodbye, my sweet. I'm starting at daybreak. By this time tomorrow night, Gary will know.
Guess our tiger doesn't like rain. Or else, like Barbara, he's scared of thunder.
Well, if he's hungry, he'll show up when he senses that water buffalo we staked out. Hey, keep that gun under your poncho. You can't shoot a tiger with wet powder.
Yeah, sure. I'm so excited I didn't think. Do we have to keep absolutely quiet?
No. Cat can't hear us over this rain. Why, you got something on your mind?
No, not exactly. I just wondered if Babs was sick or something. She sort of promised me she'd come along whenever you paid us a visit.
Well, it's a long trip, you know. Bad weather.
Oh, sure, I understand. I couldn't expect her to come out in this. She didn't send a note or anything?
No, I left in a hurry. Just yelled into her I was going as they brought my horse around.
Oh, sure, well, that explains it. What did she say?
Say? Oh, you mean when I rode off. Something about sending her love, I believe.
Uh-huh. She couldn't send very much.
What?
I brought most of it along with me.
Oh. I guess you think quite a lot of her, don't you? What are you laughing at?
Well, that's such a funny way to say it, Mr. Carson. It's such a terrific understatement.
Yeah?
I guess you've never been in love, have you? That is, not in love with a girl like Babs.
Maybe I haven't. What's it like?
Like? Well, it's sort of belonging, of being a part of each other, so that you laugh when she laughs and cry when she cries. And if she died, most of you would die too. I don't explain it very well, but you'll feel the same way when you fall in love, Mr. Carson.
Suppose, instead of dying, one of you just went away.
Went away? Why?
Oh, any reason. Maybe one of you stopped being in love.
Stopped being in love? Babs and me?
It happens every day.
Now, that's to everyday people. It couldn't ever happen to us.
But suppose it did.
Well, then it couldn't be for long, Mr. Carson. Only for a little while. Why, we belong together as well as you belong to these swamps and jungles. No matter how far any of us wandered away, we'd all come back eventually the way we belonged. I guess I don't put it very well.
Yes. I think you put it swell.
What's that?
A bullet. He sent it to the tiger. Come on, get your rifle ready.
Right. Can I have first shot at him?
You'll guarantee you won't miss.
You'll be right here to back me up?
There he is, just coming out in the clearing. Wait. Wait till he crouches to spring. Then aim right back of the shoulder.
Oh, I didn't know they came that big.
All right, get him.
Missed. Good shot.
Well, man's got to be lucky at something. Mac.
Yeah, boss?
Get the boys busy on that skin and bring my horse around.
Yeah, okay, boss.
Mr. Carson, you're not starting back to the house tonight, are you?
Yes.
But it's dark and starting to rain harder.
I've got a little job to do.
Can't it wait till tomorrow?
No, I'm afraid not. So long, kid. Come on, Mac. Hurry up with that horse.
A chance you might come back tonight. Here, let me help you with your coat.
No. Here, too wet. But you can hang this gun belt over that chair.
Dennis.
Yeah?
Did you tell Gary?
Tell Gary what?
About us.
Oh, that. Well, now, Barbara, look, let's talk this over. Here, sit down. Sit down and make yourself comfortable.
Dennis.
Now, listen, beautiful. You didn't really think we were going to tell Gary, did you?
Of course.
Oh, come now. You never told before, did you?
Dennis, you don't know what you're saying. Well, darling, you mustn't joke about things like this.
Well, who's joking? Say, we've been getting along fine without telling Gary up to now, haven't we? Oh, why complicate things? Come on, let's be grown up.
Dennis, don't make me hate you.
Well, hate me for what? Here. Let's pour a loving cup and drink to a better understanding.
You mean it's been this way all along? All those times you said you've loved me?
Then what's the matter, beautiful? You losing your sense of humor on the home stretch? Come on, be a sport. Here, give us a little kiss.
Don't.
Oh, be sensible.
Stop it.
Well, all right, if you're going to stage a scene and be a child about it.
Dennis, you can't mean what you've just said.
Listen, I'm this way when I'm bored, see, and I'm bored now.
Bored?
Well, I have to fall in love with you just because you turn up here uninvited? You're a few kisses anyway.
Dennis.
Wives don't belong here because they can't keep their heads. But I thought you could. That's why I was willing to pass the time pleasantly.
Oh! How could I have ever thought you were anything but what you are?
But as long as you don't want to play on that basis, we can call it quits right here. Now stop looking like you've been shell-shocked and go to bed and sleep it off.
You never meant one word. You never meant anything beautiful between us.
Stop the hysterics. I think I've made it plain. Would you like me to begin all over? Barbara.
You never meant it at all.
Give me that gun.
Leave me alone. Don't touch me.
Are you crazy? Give me that gun.
You're hurting me. Damn it. Dennis!
Hey, Van Teen.
I'm right here by the bed, Denny.
Is that Limey's boat whistling?
Yeah. He tied up at the landing early this morning.
Hey, you know, I must have gone out like a light last night.
Gee, Denny, I was scared. I thought you were going to die.
Die? What's a bullet in the shoulder? Hey, where are the kids?
They've gone. I watched them go up the gangplank with their arms around each other.
That's good. He was a nice guy.
Yeah. She was okay, too.
Well, that's a lot coming from you.
Listen, Denny, Were you really in love with her?
Me? Of course not. Women are all the same to me.
You're a liar, Denny. A great, big, beautiful liar. I hate to go away and leave you like this, but you don't want me around. I ain't no lady.
And I ain't no gentleman, baby.
Oh, yes, you are. There was a swell act you put on to bring those kids together. I've got to hand it to you, Denny.
Thanks.
But, gee, you're an awful fool.
Oh, look who's talking.
Didn't I say you'd get into a mess?
I always suspected you were the kind of a dame who said, I told you so.
Oh, yeah. Well, for 2 cents, I'd take that boat.
Yes, and if I wasn't flat on my back, I'd put you on it.
Is that so? Well, all I hope is you don't catch a cold when I breeze out that door.
That's right. Take a run-out powder. Go ahead. Leave me here to suffer. Go on.
I'm going.
Well, why don't you go?
Well, you don't have to rush me.
What are you stalling for?
Who's stalling?
You are. I know what's in your mind.
Oh, a mind reader, eh?
You think if you hang around long enough, there's a slim chance I might ask you to marry me.
Why, you big lump.
Don't fool yourself, baby. I'd rather lie here and die all alone.
Why, I wouldn't marry you if you were the last guy left in the whole... Oh. Oh, gee, Danny, you wouldn't kid me, would you?
You're the dizziest dame in Indochina. I must be nuts, or I wouldn't even bother with you. Here I am, raving with fever, and you take me serious.
Oh, Danny.
Hey, stop it, will you? You can't go dropping tears in a bullet wound. Did you ever hear of hygiene?
Next week, the Gulf Theater proudly presents the pair you've all been waiting for. Vivian Leigh and Laurence Olivier in Noel Coward's great comedy, Private Lives. Miss Leigh and Mr. Olivier portray a divorced couple who meet again on their second honeymoon and suddenly decide to fall in love all over again. It's a merry, mad mix-up. And you'd better make a note right now to be at the Gulf Theater next Sunday night with Vivian Leigh, Laurence Olivier, and Oscar Bradley's orchestra with Frank Tours conducting. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying good night, everybody, for your neighborhood good Gulf Theater.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater, with an adaptation of the 1932 motion picture directed by Victor Fleming, Red Dust. Clark Gable and Ann Southern, our stars in that episode from October 6th, 1940. Jean Harlow was the female lead in the motion picture, and her husband of just 2 months, Paul Byrne, had committed suicide during a break in the production, causing one of the biggest Hollywood controversies to date. And because of the tragedy, Jean Harlow had to film her scenes again with higher necklines on her costumes. On a lighter note, it would be the first of 5 motion pictures where Harlow was paired with Clark Gable. This is Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you drama from the golden age of radio. I'm Mark Levonier. Now it's time for Stars Over Hollywood, a CBS broadcast from April 5th, 1952, with Clayton Post, Jack Crucian, and film actor John Payne in the story Back Home.
Nation, Art Ballinger. Welcome to Hollywood, home and workshop of the world's most glamorous people. Each week, Stars Over Hollywood is brought to you by Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. And today we present Back Home Again, starring John Payne. Curtain going up. The story began with an item carried by all the big news services. Owing to the unprecedented prosperity of farmers during recent years, the news story said, the little village of Newton, population 1,183, is the wealthiest town per capita in the state. That item was read with interest by everyone, economists, appliance salesmen, and others. Among the others was a one-time resident of Newton, Joe Gort.
That's what I was saying. Now, don't rush me. Just let me tell it my own way. When I read that thing in the paper, I got a funny feeling, hometown pride and hate all mixed up. Newton, the wealthiest town in the state. Newton, the town that sent me to reform school. I decided to come back to Newton.
Ain't they apt to recognize you, Joe?
Nobody from Newton's seen me in 20 years. I was 14 when they sent me away. I've changed, Jake. More than my name.
Maybe. Still, it sounds like an awful little town for a stranger to hang around the bank without being noticed.
I won't hang around the bank, Jake, except when I've got business there.
What business?
Banking business. I'm going to take some of the dough we have stashed and deposit in the bank. It'll give me a legitimate excuse for being there at the same time.
Gee, I'd never thought of that.
That's why I take 60 and you and Marty split 40.
Yeah.
Incidentally, where is Marty?
He got a little high, went out to have a talk with a dame. He says he's been too diming him.
That jerk. This is the last job we're going to use him on.
Yeah, well, you tell him. I don't want any part of that job.
I'll tell him.
He's an awful good man with the rod, Joe.
Too good. He's kill crazy. Now, look,
I'm going to Newton in the morning. When I have everything figured out and timed, I'll wire you and Marty to come down and handle your end of the job.
Okay.
And be sure he behaves himself. Newton's my hometown. If anybody's killed on this job, I want to pick him and handle it myself. I was plenty nervous when I got off the train, wondering if anybody had recognized me. And my blood pressure practically blew a gasket when I went to the bank and bumped right smack into Judge Henning, the JP who sent me up. He didn't recognize me, so I went over to the cashier.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
My name's Gort, Joseph T. Gort. I've come to Newton looking for a business opportunity. Perhaps a farm that's a good buy or a store. I'm open-minded.
Well, there are several good buys here or hereabouts, Mr. Gort, but I'm afraid they all require considerable capital.
That's why I came to the bank first, to establish credit. I'd like to open an account with this cashier's check.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, $25,000.
If I need more, it's available.
Well, it'll probably be a couple of days before you can draw against this.
Oh, that's all right. I don't expect to buy the first thing I see.
Yeah, yes, I can understand that.
As a matter of fact, I'd appreciate any advice you could give me.
Well, you could probably get much better advice from that man you bumped into as you entered the bank.
Oh?
And the gentleman was Judge Henning. Oh, this is his daughter coming over now.
Daughter? Judge Henning's daughter?
Mm-hmm. Hi, Martha.
Oh, hello, Bob.
Martha, I'd like you to meet Mr. Gort. Mr. Gort, Miss Henning.
How do you do?
Hello. Mr. Gort's come to Newton looking for a business opportunity, Martha.
Wonderful. Newton could use some new blood.
I'm certain it'll get some.
I hope so. Say, why don't you ask Mr. Gort to come to lunch with us, Bob? Maybe we can sell him Dad's farm.
Hey, great idea. Would you care to have lunch with us, Mr. Gort?
Any man that turned down a chance to have lunch with Miss Henning would be a fool.
Well, thank you. Bob doesn't ever say things like that. Do you, Bob?
He's a banker, Miss Henning. Bankers are notoriously cold-blooded.
Besides, Mr. Gort, I'm engaged to the girl. Well, shall we eat?
That was quite a lunch. Bob was trying hard to talk business opportunities, but Martha and I weren't listening. We were talking to each other about each other. Before we left the restaurant, I managed to get myself invited to a box social that was going to be that night. I had the dough to outbid Bob, so I had supper with Martha and took her home afterwards.
Oh, I had a wonderful time, Mr. Gort. I don't know how to thank you.
You might start by forgetting that Mr. Gort and calling me Joe.
All right, Joe.
Why the hesitation?
I don't know. You're different from anyone I've ever known.
In what way?
Oh, it's difficult to say. Maybe it's the fact that you were the only man at the social who was willing to pay $20 for his supper.
I'd have paid $100 if necessary. I believe in eliminating competition quickly.
No matter what the cost?
I don't go after anything unless I want it badly, Martha. And if I want it badly enough, I usually get it.
Not always?
No. Just usually.
You know, you're a little frightening.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't willingly frighten you for anything in the world.
I'm sure you wouldn't. Oh, Joe. Please, Joe.
You left your purse at the school, Martha.
Oh. Oh, thank you, Bob. Thank you very much.
That's all right. If you're going to your hotel, Mr. Gort, I'll walk down with you.
Oh, sure.
I have to go in now anyway. I hope I'll see you again, Mr. Gort.
Don't worry, Miss Henning. You will. Good night.
I'm in love with Martha, Mr. Gort.
Yeah?
She's never been out of Newton. She doesn't know much about men like you.
What do you mean, men like me?
Why, men who've been around. She's a wonderful girl, Mr. Gort, and I'd hate to see her unhappy.
Yeah, can't argue that with you. What are you driving at?
Why, I just wish you'd stay away from her. I'll be glad to. Oh,
thanks.
Anytime she tells me that she wants me to stay away from her.
I said, that's the way it is, huh?
Yeah, that's the way it is. I think she's a wonderful girl, too. But I don't think I'd make her unhappy.
But you just met her today. You don't know anything about her.
I know she's Judge Henning's daughter. That's all I need to know. I know that romance and bank robberies don't mix. And this is the first time in my life that I'd ever let pleasure interfere with my business, but I was so anxious to get even, really even, with Judge Henning that I almost forgot what brought me to Newton. And Martha was such a chump, such a beautifully lovely chump that she made it a pleasure to forget. Using the judge's car and gas, she carted me all over the countryside looking for my opportunity, never guessing that as far as I was concerned, she was it.
I hope I'll be able to find something to interest you soon, Joe.
You wouldn't have to look outside this car.
You know, I don't believe you're really looking for a business opportunity.
Hmm? What makes you say that?
Well, Bob doesn't think you are.
No. And why does he think I'd come to a town like Newton?
That's what puzzles him.
I see. I guess I better have a little heart-to-heart talk with Bob.
Oh, he's just jealous, Joe.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't like nosy people. Particularly when they get nosy about my business.
Don't talk that way, Joe.
Huh? What way?
The way you were talking. That look in your eyes. And your mouth. You looked as though you were ready to curl back your lips and bite.
Huh. I wouldn't ever bite you.
I hope not.
Why don't you pull over to the side of the road and park so we can talk?
Like this?
No. Like this.
Oh, Joe.
Do you love me, Martha?
I'm all mixed up. At times like that, I'm sure I do. Other times... What did you do before you came to Newton, Joe?
Why, I've been interested in finance.
It's awfully vague.
Look, baby, a dollar needs no references. In my own way, I've done pretty well, and I expect to do a lot better before I leave Newton. But right now, I just can't seem to concentrate on money. You know what I mean?
I know.
Well?
I can't, Joe. I'm engaged to Bob. Before you came to Newton, I couldn't imagine a life without him.
And you should be very grateful for what I've done to your imagination.
Please don't joke. Bob's a wonderful boy and...
Yeah, yeah. He's still just that, a boy.
I've known him all my life. And I know that he's decent and honest.
Meaning?
Meaning that I respect him. And I'm going to have to be awfully sure in my own mind before I do anything that would hurt him.
You'll be awfully sure, baby. Come here. When I knew I had Martha hooked any time I wanted to make my move, I concentrated on the bank. That was a cinch. It was a pushover, and I wired Jake and Marty to come on. When they hit town and came into my room, Marty was so high he had himself believing he was Billy the Kid. I was tempted to drive him out in the country and put one through his head. I wish now I had.
He swore he wouldn't even take a drink, Joe. Then he went to the men's room and came back like this.
Why didn't you kill him right there on the train?
I never thought of it. Besides, he might could kill me first.
Any time, Jake. You either, Joe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We may check into that sometime, Marty.
What's wrong with now, Joe?
I've got other things on my mind.
Joe's thinking about dough, Marty. Important dough. Don't bother him with a small talk about killing.
I like to talk about killing.
Well, I think it's both gruesome and illegal. Now, let's stop it and talk some legitimate business. When do we knock off this bank, Joe?
Tomorrow afternoon at closing time. If you can get this thing straightened up in time.
Lay off me, Joe, or I'm going to choose you.
Don't. Not unless you feel real lucky.
I do, Joe. I feel real lucky.
Why don't you two guys quit before I'm in business by myself?
Yeah. Well, okay, Jake. Now, here's the setup. At 3:15, I go into the bank and start talking with Bob Rogers, the cashier. At 3:05, you two come.
That Burns character sure knew what he was talking about when he made that crack about mice and men, didn't he? Anyway, after warning Jake to keep Marty in the room so he couldn't get us into trouble, I left to keep a date with Martha. We drove out in the country again and parked.
Hey.
I'm sorry, Joe. My elbow hit the horn button.
Oh.
Why are you so nervous tonight, Joe?
Why, I didn't think I was.
Well, you certainly acted.
I guess I've been thinking too much about business.
Have you made your decision?
Yeah, I have.
Are you going to buy Dad's farm?
I don't think so.
Oh. Oh, I wish you'd reconsider, Joe. Dad has to sell the farm and...
Well, he doesn't have to sell it to me, does he?
No. It's only that I was raised there, and I'd like to raise my children
raise
there.
Raise kids?
Of course, Joe.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't been thinking that far ahead.
I have. The first one's going to be a boy. Joe Jr.
Yeah? How do you know the first one will be a boy?
Because I want a boy to be first. A boy just like you, Joe. So that when he grows up, he'll be successful and strong
oh,
and...
Yeah.
Oh, I bet you were a cute little boy.
Sure. Everybody said I'd go a long way. Then they sent me.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. Why are we talking about kids?
Well, it's the natural thing, isn't it? When people are going to be married.
I guess it is.
We are going to be married, aren't we, Joe?
Oh, sure we are, baby. Just as soon as we get to the city.
You mean we're not going to be married here at home?
I wasn't planning on it. I figured we'd go to the city and see a friend of mine who's a JP, get married quietly, go on our honeymoon, and come back.
Oh, I'd rather be married here at home, Joe, with Dad performing the ceremony.
What? I hadn't thought of that. Say, that's a great idea. That's perfect, him marrying you to me.
I hoped you'd like it.
Oh, I do, baby, I do. It's wonderful, even better than I'd planned. Why don't we tie the knot?
Anytime you say, Joe.
Well, the sooner the quicker. How about tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow?
Well, why not? There's no 3-day law in the state. We'll get married in the morning. I'll take care of my business in the afternoon, and we'll leave on our honeymoon immediately.
But I haven't anything to wear.
Oh, we'll buy your clothes as we go along.
But...
Oh, the best shops, everything first class. Money, no object.
All right.
Great.
I hope we're doing the right thing, Joe.
Right, baby. It's perfect. Being married to you by your old man is everything I need.
How's that for a laugh, huh? The judge who sent me to reform school marrying me to his daughter. Of course, he wouldn't know about it till later, but just thinking about it put me even with life right then. The next morning, after giving Jake and Marty a last-minute warning to keep their noses clean, I met Martha in the county clerk's office. We got our license and drove out to the Henning farm.
It's my turn to be nervous today, Joe.
Why? Lots of people get married.
I know, but... Oh, Joe, are you sure you want to marry me?
I was never sure of anything in my life.
I'm glad one of us is sure.
What do you mean?
Well, your coming to Newton's changed my whole life, Joe. Before you arrived, I knew exactly where I stood, what I was going to do, almost what I'd be doing in 5 years, 10 years, 20.
It'd be pretty dull, wouldn't it?
Dull? Maybe. But still, it gave me a feeling of security. I'm not very old, Joe. I'm not very experienced. I know you're exciting and different, and... when we leave here, you'll be all I have.
Yeah.
Both Bob and my dad have warned me that I don't know you well enough to marry you.
Well, then why do it?
Because I can't seem to help myself, Joe.
How old are you, Martha?
18. How old did you think I was?
Why, I don't know. 25, 26. Who can tell a dame's age from the time she's 16 till she's 30? How old is Bob?
23.
18 and 23. I'm 34. Hey, how come Bob's cashier of the bank if he's only 23?
Well, Bob's father used to be cashier until he was killed during a bank robbery when Bob was 16. The bank gave Bob a job.
That was generous of him. This town sure takes care of its kids.
Bob's very grateful. I don't know how many times he's told me that if anyone ever tried to rob the bank while he was there, he'd die before he gave up a cent.
Yeah, well, people act differently when there's a gun against their ribs.
Bob wouldn't. His father died fighting, unarmed, with a gun against his ribs.
Well, there's no explaining suckers. Come on, let's get in here and get your dad to tie the knot.
When Martha opened the door, I reached into my pocket and felt for the marriage license. Then, all of a sudden, I knew I couldn't do it, not to a kid like Martha. Newton might be able to send me over the road at 14 and put Bob Rogers to work at 16, but Newton couldn't make me wreck Martha's life at 18. So I kissed her once. Not the way I'd kissed her before, but the way I would have kissed her if I'd been decent and maybe 10 years younger. And I said goodbye and turned and ran back to the car. All of a sudden, I was afraid that Marty, I was afraid for Bob. Afraid that Marty would force Jake to go to the bank with him without waiting for me. I was scared and I drove like the devil. Just as I pulled into town, I saw Marty and Jake going to the bank. I saw Marty with his gun in Bob's ribs and Bob getting ready to fight unarmed. So I pulled my gun and yelled.
Marty!
He's a boss, Marty.
Who says he's a boss?
I say so, Marty. Come away from that kid or I'll prove it.
Okay, Joe. You asked for it.
You have to do better than that, Marty. Get him, Jake. He's crazy. Nice shooting, Jake.
Thanks, boss. I knew we shouldn't have come without you. I told Marty.
He shoots pretty good, too, Joe. Awful good.
I didn't get the bank, and I didn't get even with Judge Henning, though maybe I did in a way. But I did get back home, didn't I?
Yes, Joe. You got back home. And when you get well,
Don't get me. I'm not going to get well. I don't want to get well. I've seen the other side of things for once, and I don't like my side anymore.
What I can't understand, Joe, is why you'd stand there like a clay pigeon letting this Marty shoot you to pieces without firing back. It just wasn't human.
Sonny, I never carried a loaded gun in my life. I was always scared of them things.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show, as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring John Payne. In just a moment, we'll have news about next week's show. Meantime, how about a curtain call, John Payne?
Well, call me Johnny on the spot, Art.
Only at this point, John, we have nothing but compliments to fire your way. That was a great job.
Well, thank you, Art. You know, I feel rather badly about Joe Gort, though. He wasn't a bad fella after all. Came to such a sad, sad end, however.
Still, that seems to be the path of crime, John. But right now, let's put tragic endings aside and turn to pleasant and promising beginnings. I'm talking about that wonderful start in life enjoyed by Carnation babies everywhere. And now, John, for your outstanding performance today, here's a full month's supply of boutonnieres, this big bouquet of red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of Carnation evaporated milk.
It's just what I've always needed, Art. Thanks. Now, may I ask what next week's show has to offer?
Our star on next Saturday's Stars of Hollywood show will be David Niven.
Oh, that's good. Davey always gives a fine performance. And what's the story?
It's a dramatic play about a pianist. And quite appropriately, the title is Fantasy Impromptu.
Well, I'll be sure to be listening, Art. But for now, it's goodbye.
And now for the Carnation Company and Stars Over Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger suggesting that you be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Tune in next Saturday and hear Stars Over Hollywood with David Niven, the famous international star of the screen, the stage, and radio. David Niven will be presented in person, playing a very dramatic role in Fantasy Impromptu. Stars Over Hollywood brings to you, in person, actors you have seen in motion pictures and heard on the radio, actors whom you know. For the world's greatest stars, presented in person, hear Stars Over Hollywood every Saturday. Stay tuned now for Grand Central Station, which follows immediately over most of these stations. Stars Over Hollywood comes to you from our Hollywood studios and is heard in Canada over the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Stars Over Hollywood on Tune 2 Yesterday from CBS, heard on April 5th, 1952. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tune 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levillier. Thanks for listening.